Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled The Great Network Equipment Migration, Design Decisions to Survive the Big Bang. I'm Kurt Schwader, technical editor at Open Systems Media, and today's moderator with speakers Paul Senishin and Steve Conish from Wind River. Today's schedule consists of 50 minutes of presentation, leaving a 10-minute Q&A session at the end. Before we begin, though, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentation, and we do encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these questions as possible during the closing Q&A. If you have any question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Now, we also have some polls during the presentation today. We ask that when you see those, please respond to them when they're on your screen. And finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will also be made available. We'll talk about this a little more at the end of the Q&A. Our speakers for today's event are Paul Senishin and Steve Conish from Wind River. Paul joins us from the San Antonio airport, and we apologize for any noise, background noise you might hear, but it's well worth it to have a person of Paul's experience level on the phone with us today. He has more than 20 years of experience in developing networking products and solutions. He is the Network and Telecom Solutions Business Development Manager for Wind River. Prior to joining, he had a breadth of experience working at Ciena and Nortel Networks. He's also led the research and development of small and medium business products, next-generation carrier Ethernet platforms, and optical switching products. He also has held key business roles in other product line management strategy and advanced technology and operations facilities. He has a master's degree in electrical engineering and in computer science from Queen's the University in Kingston, Ontario. Joining him is Steve Conish, Senior Engineering Specialist. He's a member of Wind River's engineering solutions team that specializes in network acceleration technologies, embedded software optimization, and security. Steve spends most of his time solving the most challenging use case problems for their customers. He has a lead role in building and integrating deep packet inspection solutions for next generation network equipment. Steve has been with Wind River for 13 years, and prior to that, he spent 5 years at MITRE Corporation as a lead networking and distributed systems engineer. He holds a BS degree in electrical engineering from Rutgers and an MS degree in telecommunications from the University of Colorado. Steve also served in the U.S. Army and was qualified as an airborne ranger. Gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Thanks very much, Kurt. Really appreciate everybody taking the time and attending this webcast. So, Kurt, let's get started. Let's move to the next slide. So when we look at what's happening within sort of, let's call it the market galaxy, there's a lot of factors that are affecting the different products that we find in that galaxy, and you can see them here, from cost reduction. We're constantly faced by pressures from our customers. Consolidation when we're trying to reduce our overall costs of our products and bring different products together to come up with new and innovative solutions, performance, capacity, hyper-connectivity, everything is connected these days. With the massive traffic growth, it's amazing. And all that is driving new security, different ways of looking at security and trying to figure out how it will be affected, the scalability and flexibility of our networks. So, all these pressures are coming in, and in some cases they're going to be supernovas within our market galaxy. And, some things will die and some things will grow. But it's quite an exciting time, and we've got a lot of different forces that are affecting our products within this galaxy. So let's go to the next slide, Kurt. As we're looking at our products, what are the big rocks that we need to navigate, right? Get around as we're trying to steer our way through growth and success in the marketplace. You know, we've got to figure out how we deal with ever-growing complexity, right? How do we take our existing IP and assets and move them forward? You know, how do we leverage our core competencies? You know, the targets and timeframes and capabilities are constantly moving. You know, IT cloud infrastructure is taking hold. And, you know, some of those aspects we're starting to see come into our space. So how do we leverage those, not collide with them and use them to our advantage? And as a result of this, it's also creating opportunities to new competitors. So it's a very exciting time, and I think I've almost exhausted the galaxy analogy. But so let's go on to a quick poll. Kurt, could you go to the next? So, you know, I'd like to hear from you guys a little bit on, you know, what is the one design change that you need to make your product more competitive? If you guys could read those, click on those, and submit your answers, and we can take a quick peek in the next few minutes on what people's thoughts are, where they challenge the most.
Thanks. We appreciate it. And please, audience, submit your answers now as you read through the selections. I'll be moving the slide to the poll result now.
Okay. So clearly it looks like finding new ways to leverage existing assets within new systems. That's quite interesting. What do you think of that, Steve?
Yeah, that's not surprising, right? As everyone wants to reuse the technology they have to their best advantage, but doing that is always adds complexity, right?
Absolutely. And then the next one was utilize virtualization technologies. But clearly the first one is how do they take their existing assets and move them forward. Okay, all right, let's move on a little bit. I think we've got some areas that we can talk about and how we can help. So when you look at it and you try to summarize and you look at the evolution, right, we see basically three major thrusts, making things faster, smarter, and then more secure. So as you work through this, we see there's basically eight design decisions that you're going to be affected as you make this evolution and move forward into building your next products. And then we got basically a slide on each one of these, and we'll go through them one by one, give you a sense of what you can do, how you can consider some of these aspects in designing your next products. Okay. So let's go to the next slide. Okay. You know, advanced multi-core technologies. If we step back and we look at just sort of that Moore's Law growth in silicon, now we're seeing multi-cores being put, you know, more than ever, and the consolidation of very complex systems on a chip or SoCs, really. And what it's doing, it really, you know, gives you opportunities to increase your packet performance, your application processing, gives you an opportunity to consolidate the compute horsepower into much smaller footprints and onto single devices, where before you'd have to have complex chips on one board or multiple boards to take advantage of that. So, you know, Steve, you've done some work on control and data plane and some signal processing stuff. Some of your thoughts in this area? And the...
Yeah. I just got back from Asia, actually. And, you know, the huge trend we're seeing is in and around the consolidation piece, right? So we've got these really powerful processors, multi-core, you know, with many cores on them, right? And you know, that's truly enabling multi-core consolidation. So now we can do, you know, packet acceleration, management plane activities, etc., all on a single board, if you will. And so it's allowing us to consolidate and you know, merge things together with and without virtualization, right?
Right. Good. Okay, let's talk about some of the software that's going to enable these multi-core technologies and these huge systems on chip to work. Let's go to the next slide. So you know, what's the next piece that needs to be solved really to take advantage of this the silicon power is a new software baseline, right? And if we don't coordinate the different activities, these gears won't mesh, right? And we believe that there's new software you're seeing from the different silicon providers, their software development kits or their libraries, really to help them make these functions available. And, you know, as these software libraries then are incorporated into, Steve, maybe you can talk to this. There's an announcement going on right now, and I'll go on mute for a second here. Go ahead.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, things have changed quite a bit, really. In the old days, you know, the software baseline might be, you know, an operating system with some libraries around it and leveraging some past internal libraries, for example. And that's really changed quite a bit, right? So now we have, you know, operating systems running on a different platform. It might be multiple operating systems running as multiple guest operating systems. You know, and then that, of course, you know, implies virtualization, right? And then, you know, then we're bringing in things like packet acceleration capabilities, things like software development kits from the silicon vendors, like, for example, Intel's Data Plane Development Kit. So, you know, that the software baseline is now, you know, consists of these components integrated together and validated together on new hardware platforms. So the trick here is to sort of piece it all together and you know, find a way to get the performance you need, you know, on the latest processors.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Steve. Let's go to the next slide. You look at this baseline a little bit more closely.
Yeah, so again, you know, here we have, you know, this ties into the whole Linux evolution, right? You know, we started out with a simple Linux kernel, but you know, we need the robustness of carrier grade, you know, features, right? So companies like Wind River are extending hardening the Linux distributions to be more robust. But each year we're leveraging more and more of the open source capabilities, right? So Wind River is moving towards a Yocto-based distribution environment so we can better leverage the emerging packages that are out there. And then we're tying in things like virtualization to be able to do, or load multiple guest operating systems on top of that baseline. You know, we could have, for example, VxWorks with a pre-existing software running in one guest operating system. And right beside that, we could have yet another Linux guest operating system running in parallel, doing, for example, some additional packet acceleration or management activities. So it gives us a lot of flexibility. And that ties back to, you know, the leveraging the pre-existing intellectual property that these companies have. So then, lastly, we tie in the packet acceleration capabilities and the development lifecycle tools. So Wind River provides a vast amount of lifecycle tools to essentially develop, debug, analyze, and test your code, and then that includes some pretty complicated tools to essentially eliminate your bottlenecks and get the best performance you can.
Yes, tools are an interesting topic. We could probably have a whole discussion about those, but I see one of the key values from my background is really having a consistent set of tools, because these systems are getting so complex, and in many cases you don't have the luxury of having your development team all in one place. And if you don't have a consistent, you know, what I call an enterprise-wide set of tools to develop, debug, and troubleshoot, you end up having difficulties to reproducing errors, to aligning on performance if everybody's using similar but slightly different tools. So I think that's another key area people should consider and understand when they're taking on these development tasks, to really make sure they have a consistent strategy that they can deploy enterprise-wide or at least across their team so they can get consistent results. Okay, let's go to the next slide and talk a little bit about embedded virtualization. know, I think we there's multiple use cases. One of the key things we heard on the poll was about how they take their assets and how they move them forward into this new world. So, you know, there's that first bullet, we kind of coined the phrase asset bridging. How do you take that asset and bridge it forward? Steve, maybe you could talk a little bit about hypervisor technologies and how those could be applied to help in this area.
Right. There's a lot of different options on the table, right? There's the bare metal hypervisor options, which we've explored in depth, and then there's the some more user space friendly, if you will, options like KVM or VMware, and they all essentially enable you to do this hardware consolidation piece, right? But there's various performance trade-offs, right? And then, there's other questions involved, like what security features do we need? Will this involve the cloud? If so, which pieces do we need to move into the cloud and whatnot?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's, from an embedded perspective, one of the key goals talking to a lot of our customers has been, how do they take their embedded application today as is, and how do they leverage the virtualization technology that's out there without undergoing a vast amount of re-engineering and redesign, especially with those systems that have very specific performance targets and real-time expectations. One of the key markets is that we're seeing is growing very rapidly is the wireless infrastructure market. And, really to be able to bring those applications and really, design one application and have it being deployed either at the core of the network or at the edge of the network really requires some very stringent, performance and interrupt latency jitter kind of targets. And, there's companies, and specifically, Wind River, I know we're investing very heavily on trying to bring real time to KVM. It goes beyond just the virtualization you can get from an IT perspective, where with our carrier systems, our customers that have, 5 nines, 30 minutes of downtime a year kind of expectations, it's clearly not within the scope of what currently is being deployed in IT today, and you really need to kind of look at it very differently. And in many cases, for our platforms to allow services to operate at 5 nines, you actually need an infrastructure and development system that will operate at 6 nines, take it yet another order of magnitude even more stringent. And that's the area that we play in, and I think you need to look for solutions like that moving forward. And that kind of touches on sort of the carrier expectations and carrier cloud. Really, we see over the next several years this cloud concept, embedded cloud, starting to take hold. The service providers, creating sort of private cloud infrastructure for their specific vendors. I don't think over the next, several years at least, they will allow too much commingling between different vendors. It will really be more homogeneous. One supplier has their own private set of servers that they're deploying things. They'll look to consolidate some applications there, but it's going to be very, very exciting, and looking forward to those challenges there. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Talked a little bit about this, and really looked at this. I think we covered it around moving there. Steve, do you have any more comments on sort of the cloud radio access network kind of deployment scenario here?
Sure. This is an example where, virtualization, as we know, can have numerous benefits, including a dynamic resource allocation. So here's just a graphical picture of, how that might all work, So everyone's looking for that dynamic, right, where we have a system that's essentially, the guess going into the design was that maybe two cores, two systems were working independently on two separate cores, but they were just overly busy. And so you would want that capability to dynamically reassign cores so that those systems essentially have more CPU power. So So here's just one example where we could do that with some dynamic resourcing, by reassigning cores or adding more cores to those applications to give them the CPU power they need to handle that load.
Okay. I think if we look at these virtualization use cases, I think we've got a slide on it next. Can we go to that one? Next slide, please.
Could be
as Steve mentioned, there's multiple use cases, and this is a real eye chart. Don't try to read everything on here, but as you look to take advantages of these infrastructures, there's many different applications and considerations. There are solutions out there. If you want some more information, you want some ideas, drop us a note. Here's an email, and we're happy to talk to you about what you're trying to do and different scenarios and options that you can look at to solve some of your problems here. So let's go to the next slide. Okay, packet acceleration and performance. This is definitely one of the key enablers moving forward. And Steve, this is you've been working on this for quite a while right now. Why don't you take us through this?
Sure. Yeah. Packet acceleration is key, and it's one thing to do packet acceleration. It's another thing to do that with CPU intensive applications. So we've been looking at just that, is looking at really CPU intensive things like deep packet inspection for flow classification or pattern matching, and trying to figure out how to optimize the packet throughput accordingly. And so we're the goal when we design these systems is to get linear scaling. And, what we've learned is, by building out, baseline software on top of things like these software development kits from the silicon vendors, one example is Intel's Data Plane Development Kit, is that we can, pretty much achieve that linear scaling. This is a graph that just shows exactly that. So the idea here is that as we throw more cores at it, we want to be able to get, more and more performance, right? So that's our goal, and that's what we've been trying to achieve. And so the key here, too, is to try and, integrate all these pieces of the puzzle, and to get that kind of performance is really something great. And so we've been extremely successful so far in doing that, and we continually show that at various trade shows and whatnot.
So maybe could you let's go to the next slide. Maybe Steve, you can walk us through, what that framework looks like. Can you could you do that?
Sure. Yeah. So let's move on to design decision 5. So it's important to lay out an accelerated network foundation, right? So we start by consolidating the control plane and the data plane onto a single board, and companies like Intel enable us to do that with these powerful processors with multiple cores, right? So we go ahead and anchor that to a robust carrier-grade Linux distribution, such as Winrover Linux. And we'll go ahead and use things like native Linux applications to form the management plane. So those are just your standard Linux network applications for managing the system. But it gets more interesting for the data plane. For the data plane, we'll reserve some processor cores specifically for packet processing, for example. And these cores are then optimized to receive, process, and send packets as efficiently as possible. And on each core, we basically pop in its own network stack that's been specifically optimized for that multi-core environment, right? So we're essentially assigning these cores with CPU affinity to run all by itself, independent of the Linux scheduler. So because that network stack runs in user space, it's sitting often right next to the data it's going to go ahead and process. So we've got essentially a high-throughput, low-latency solution, ultimately. So this picture on the left side shows essentially the bigger pieces of the puzzle, and on the right we're showing this essentially a mini network stack that runs on top of each core that we're assigning to each port.
So if if customers have their legacy applications, like you heard in the poll, and they wanted to take advantage of this, where would they plug in, Steve?
Right. So we can go ahead and, what we've done is essentially pop in an accelerated network stack on top of the data plane development kit. And essentially what we've done is we've provided a standard socket interface. So we can take standard socket applications and accelerate them almost untouched, which is a pretty amazing feat.
So this would be a key thing people should keep in mind if they're trying to take their existing applications, bring them forward, look for solutions like this where really they can just use that socket kind of structure and plug in there, and that would really help them bring these assets forward. Is that correct?
That's right. So, it has a lot of different use cases too, right? So we can use this for an application gateway. We have things like, base stations that are encapsulating their wireless protocols in layer 4 sessions, if you will. So it can be an application gateway. We can also act as a VPN gateway, an accelerated VPN gateway. And we can do more advanced features like deep packet inspection for flow classification, pattern matching, or things like transparent TCP reassembly.
Right. That's great. Okay, let's go to slide number 6, the next one. Sorry, decision number 6. It's probably a lot more than slide number 6. I'm sorry. So, we talked earlier about tools. Really, it comes down to, designer productivity. What are the things that we could be looking at these days that kind of change the game? So, one of the things that that I'm really fixated on in this new world is about software simulation. Or here we call it full system simulation. And really what it does is it abstracts the hardware to the level that a software engineer cares. Traditionally where the software engineers are very dependent on hardware being available, prototypes or whatever, and then, they have to integrate against that, test, modify, you end up building a waterfall type schedule that extends over time. And, it really pinches the sort of product integration and validation phase. We've seen, simulation, software simulation technology really starting to take hold, and we've seen it actually accelerate overall programs in the order of 30 to 50% from the point at which the designers are complete, and if you start measuring at that point, to their software being integrated and then going into product verification and system test. If you look at that cycle, you can save anywhere from 30 to 50%. 50% is, if you're running into a lot of integration problems, peeling the onion, not being able to do it, the software simulation tools really help you defy the laws of physics and, reverse time and understand where things happen, things that you can't do with hardware. It's quite remarkable, and I'd encourage people to take a look at that technology. There's different solutions out there. Wind River, we have an offering referred to as Simix, but there's different things that you can use out there. But consider those things; it will really help you in your time to money, and get you focused on some of the right areas. There's other things, other development tools. That you can use testing and fault and analysis. The other area that we need to consider as you're starting to consolidate these products, how do you get better out of your product verification test area? It's typically one area where you have a number of test cases and it only grows, especially when you're bringing products together. We really need to step back and question, how do we get better? Right now, it's really just work harder. Right, outsource, automate, and work harder because the number of test cases keep growing. I think what we need to do in this industry is step back and look at how do we be more efficient testers? How do we analyze the coverage that we do have and look for techniques to actually be more efficient? And, there are areas called dynamic test coverage that really analyze dynamically which areas of your code are being covered. It's complemented by static code analysis that a lot of companies do where you're manually understanding this stuff. But But when you can do it dynamically at runtime on the target itself, there's some technology out there you can leverage, and that will really help you yet again decrease your time to market and improve your quality without sacrificing or skipping steps. So definitely encourage people to look at that stuff. And we touched earlier on enterprise-wide toolkit. Steve, do you have anything you'd like to offer on top of that?
Yeah. We've purposely designed in some capabilities just like that into our network stack that's running on top of Intel's Data Plane Development Kit. For example, one of the requests we have from our customers is that they're all competing to develop on the same system simultaneously, and they all want to test their code simultaneously. So one of the capabilities we've added is the concept of a virtual driver, so they can essentially build and test their own software prior to running on a real target. The other thing we've done is we've got an interactive command line interface, and we've built in the support for things like accept scripts to allow us to do scripted automated testing, overnight. So we can then measure the percent of coverage that we've tested on our system. So it's something we ship with the product, which is nice.
Great, that sounds good. Let's go to the next slide. So one of the other areas, Steve, is really trying to optimize the performance, right? The silicon that's being made available now, is so powerful, but really requires a lot of tuning. Could you talk a little bit about Performance Studio?
Right, absolutely. So, most projects are essentially taking the open source compiler like GNU compiler and compiling their system up, turning on optimization and hope for the best performance, right? But we have some alternatives we can do. I mean, Intel's got a great compiler, for example, that and the way we look at it is they know their processors better than the open source world does, right? So they've got a highly optimized compiler that we can just quickly switch in and run on our code and potentially get even better performance. So we ship that as part of the Performance Studio along with the integrated performance primitives, right, to allow people to get the best performance. In addition, we also ship the VTune technology so that we can essentially run our application through VTune instrumentation, go ahead and run the application, and then present the result inside of a log file, up in a graphical tool, and then we can use that to identify things like bottlenecks and whatnot and go ahead and try and eliminate those accordingly. So it's a pretty fantastic tool suite that we use to get even more throughput out of the system.
Right, that's great. Let's go to the next slide and talk a little bit about the ecosystem. I think as we look forward, our ability to really accelerate and differentiate our products, we need to focus. And having a solid ecosystem that's strategically aligned, that you can very quickly integrate, test, and bring to market and complement that with your differentiated value is going to be even more critical as we go forward. Open source technologies like KVM, like Linux, are great feeding grounds where people can collaborate and take advantage of these different companies and bring those to bear. I think it's important to understand where those are and have them aligned and being able to integrate very, very quickly. Steve, I think let's go to the next slide and you can talk a little bit about sort of the off-the-shelf development kits where some of this stuff does come together and what it's all about.
Absolutely. So we've partnered with processor and board vendors such as Intel and companies like Emerson Network Power, Advantech, and Contron to deliver validated evaluation kits on production boards. So we can essentially bring up a full Linux platform with all the packet acceleration technologies all bundled in. And then customers can, run that immediately, go through some tutorials, and measure immediately what the performance would be of that system. And so that gives them great insight into, you know, whether or not they've picked the right hardware, is it adequate enough, do they have enough cores, et cetera. And so we're looking to provide that immediate feedback to the customer.
Right. That sounds sounds great. And you know, maybe on the next slide, we could go to the next one. And you know, I think Wind River is definitely focused on creating an innovation platform. We're investing very heavily to create that infrastructure to allow our customers to focus on their value add. And you know, there's these bullets here about what we're trying to do to really create that foundation, give you the right tools in the ecosystem, you know, the 24/7, 365 support globally, because you know, with this hyper-connected world, development's happening in multiple locations, and you want the ability to support that wherever you are, or partner with that ecosystem that may be halfway around the world. And so having that support and infrastructure that's trusted and a predictable roadmap that you can rely on is getting more and more important. And you know, we're definitely, we at Wind River are very definitely investing in that area and focused on that. So let's go to the next slide. You know, maybe Steve, you can talk a little bit about the levels of integration. You've worked very heavily. I think this is looking at deep packet inspection and some of those different levels of integration.
Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of shows, you know, the integration value that we offer incrementally, right? So, you know, typically, you know, a customer of ours would, you know, download, you know, something like a data plane library from a silicon vendor, run it on top of, you know, some sort of off-the-shelf Linux and, you know, play around with it and become familiar with it. But ultimately, when they go ahead and, you know, they want to ship a real product, right, they're going to migrate to a commercial-grade or carrier-grade Linux, right, or VxWorks for that matter, with those data plane libraries, and then add in some sort of accelerated application, and that may or may not include something, you know, more complex, such as deep packet inspection. And then, you know, of course, we go ahead and, you know, go one step further, really, and we go ahead and take that bundle, if you will, that software bundle, and validate that on a commercial off-the-shelf board. Some, you know, one example might be like an Emerson Network Power ATCA 7470, for example. So we'll go ahead and validate that whole solution on there and make sure it all works, and then ship an embedded toolkit for that board so that customers can try it out and see what kind of performance they can get. And then the last you know, block on the right, number four, shows one step further, which is, you know, we've created an accelerated network stack that runs on top of these data plane libraries, and so it provides more features, adds things like layer 4 termination possibilities, and, you know, full interaction with that data plane, if you will. So it gives us more capabilities.
That's great. Thank you very much. Let's go. I think that was just about it. I think the we're now to go to Q&A. So back to you, to Kurt.
Very good. Thanks for that presentation. Now is the time for you, the audience, to participate. We are getting some questions in. We encourage you to continue to ask those questions, and as more questions come up, we'll try to get to those as well. Here's one question about Wind River Linux versus the other flavors of Linux. They would like to know if they could use their in-house Linux and achieve the same kind of data plate packet acceleration numbers that you were talking about in the presentation.
Yeah, so this is Steve. I'll go ahead and take that. I mean, sure, it's going to vary. I mean, the one thing that we offer is a you know, a validated you know, commercial grade Linux that's you know, validated on a specific platform, and you know, so we go ahead and not just to validate the stability, but also the performance. So it's not uncommon that when we compare our numbers, our performance throughput to what a customer is seeing, that we're a factor higher. So that's one of the benefits that you would get from going with something like Winterval Linux versus an off-the-shelf.
Right. So there's a number of labor months or labor years involved with adding the components to Linux to accelerate that.
Right. Absolutely. And it's becomes a build versus buy decision there, and we essentially offer project acceleration there by saving you the time and effort to do that.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And we also, I think, to chime in a little bit on that one is we also have some services and expertise that we can offer that if the customer wants to achieve that performance, and we can definitely help them. We do have an offering where we support, if it's on Intel, DPDK, where we can have some experts to answer questions, but also provide services to help you achieve those if you're struggling with those on your own distribution.
Okay.
So I think there's a varying number of options that we can do there.
I see. Okay. How close is the simulation environment to the final deployed product? Also, are there components such as the hardware flow classification, deep packet inspection, encryption, et cetera, that are also contained in the simulator? This is always a hot question when you're talking about these kinds of things.
I'll take that one, Kurt, at least the beginning of it. I'll give a very real experience. When I was leading a program, I had about 200 engineers working on this program. It was a release one program, which for a lot of you know that that's just a battle of details. Every last piece needs to be tied off. We had a very, what we thought was a compressed schedule. And when we started going through it, it was amazing what transpired. When we started our actually integration phase, my biggest employee satisfaction issue was when my software engineers came to me because they didn't know that their software was actually running on real hardware. So if you abstract the at the base level, at the right way, the software engineers are developing and integrating, testing in that environment. And then the magic as basically you start to systematically unstub, from the application through the base to actually touch the hardware, it gives you a very systematic way of doing that. And even to the point at which the developers don't know their software is actually running on the hardware. And was kind of funny, but it was too bad. So there is a, it all comes down to where you draw that line, where you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, what level do you simulate to? And again, I want to encourage or emphasize, it really is made for software developers as opposed to hardware emulation that is cycle accurate. This is like behaviorally accurate to really help and accelerate that integration and make sure that the proper communication is happening between the two. It's a fantastic tool. Now, with respect to components such as hardware flow classification, DPI encryption, can they also be accelerated? I think when you're talking about the actual software scanning, the lookup, pattern matching type stuff, it can be simulated, but again, it's behaviorally accurate. Maybe Steve, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, well, the only thing I'll add is so we're tightly aligned with the silicon vendors, so we're able to extend our software models to include things like hardware accelerators. So obviously we have a great model for each processor, but and that allows us to correctly model our software, but we can also extend that to measure how well it does with or how stable it is with the hardware accelerators as well.
Yeah,
okay.
I guess the final thing that I'll say on that one is my experience is that with this tool and the productivity gains, your software developers, after they get a little bit better at understanding what's going on and that they you know, they'll turn around and they will not want to develop any other way, because there is so much productivity and they can really see in their they're fighting the right issues as opposed to basic integration issues and having to wait for hardware to do it. It's a great tool. Okay, Kurt, next one.
All right. Here's an excellent question. I think it kind of rolls together the poll question and speaks to the majority of the people worrying about their current assets and maintaining those and moving them forward. The question is a few, actually. First, they're describing their equipment system design as a mixed bag of open source and internal code, which is probably pretty typical. They could obviously use more performance at this point, and this person wants to know how they get from where they're at now to an accelerated high-performance model involving multi-core and virtualization. He says they have lots of legacy code, and they always need to bring this forward. This could be a whole session in itself, and I know we had actually done some road shows, and Wind River has, in talking about legacy code and multi-core and virtualization. I guess the first question out of this might be, you know, thinking parallel, maybe you'd have some sort of comment on legacy code and moving it into these new virtualized environments.
I think we talked a little bit about that, but Steve, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, I mean that's a great question. So in fact, that's what a lot of our customers are doing, right? So they might have, for example, tons of legacy code that's running in a stable environment on VxWorks, for example, and they want to retain that. They don't want to have to redevelop that, and it's just too big to port. So a great option for them is to compartmentalize that inside of a guest operating system running on top of, you know, Linux, for example. So a lot of our customers are going in that direction. But the real trick here, though, is when you do that is to maintain the performance that you had previously, right, especially if you're, you know, going to a different processor architecture, et cetera, with different resources. And so what we're trying to do is provide a software baseline that has everything that these systems will need. So that might, you know, for example, involve taking a Yocto-based distribution, but taking, the real-time patches from a company like Intel, for example, and create a more, real-time friendly, baseline underneath these guest operating systems so that they get the performance they need once the port is done over to that guest operating system. So that's one approach that's very common these days.
Okay. Here's one about inter-VM communication. So, you know, embedded devices may need to communicate between virtualized environments. So what kind of inter-VM communications mechanisms are available if they're using multiple virtualized environments and they want to communicate or pass information back and forth?
Yeah, so that's another good one, right? So one easy thing to do that some of our customers are using is just to, they've got these really fast multi-gigabit network interfaces, right? So they just decide to communicate between, the guests over the network. And that works out really well. It's simple to do. It's a simple socket application. Another alternative is shared memory between the guest operating systems, which could be a little quicker, but, more challenging to set up. So those are two options that are somewhat common in the industry.
Okay. Here's a tools question. What tools are available for multi-core development debug? I think you covered some of this in your presentation, but maybe you can go a little deeper. Are the same tools I'm familiar with usable, or do they need new multi-core aware tools? I mean, there's a lot of asynchronous thing, instruction execution going on, and those kinds of things. How does that play into the tool angle?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Wind River offers what's known as Wind River Workbench, which is an Eclipse-based integrated development environment, and that's multi-board, multi-processor, multi-process, and multi-thread aware. So you can, you know, it's very typical that a data plane these days might be operating inside of user space as a POSIX process with multiple threads or multiple processes for that matter. So with today's designs, it becomes an easy thing to debug. But, you know, the more boards we have, the more interactive they become, it becomes a little bit challenging to debug those. You need a robust debugger like something like Wind River provides. The other thing people often need is the ability to dynamically instrument their code without changing it. So that's another thing that Wind River provides. We've got things called sensor points and dynamic printf, which gives the ability to instrument the code without having to recompile it, which is another value add that we offer.
Okay, and with multicore, they've invented there's an Amdahl's law that says that the amount of speed up you can get from applying N cores to a processor is a function of the largest independent code block being run. I'm kind of paraphrasing. Are you familiar with that? And I guess my question follow on to this would be, if I have an application, are there tools that help me identify how I can break apart my applications into multiple code blocks that could run independently on a number of cores?
Right, right. So there's, what everyone's familiar with mostly is the symmetric multiprocessing paradigm today, is where you have, a standard multi-core application that's being scheduled by the operating system. What we've done is to accelerate, at least in the networking space, is to run parallelized applications on individual cores outside of the Linux scheduler, and that gives us a more linear performance graph. So that's one of the tricks of the trade that we're using, in partnering with companies like Intel that give us that foundation.
Okay. And you touched on something, symmetric multiprocessing. Maybe we should talk about that a bit. There's symmetric multiprocessing, which essentially means you're kind of running the same code and replicating it across cores. And then there's asymmetric multiprocessing, which might be kind of like you were peeling off cores to do data plane things versus putting cores and doing management functions. Is that more of an asymmetric multiprocessing kind of application where you're divvying up cores to do different things?
Yeah, there's just so many permutations, right? So, some of our customers, for example, have gone with sort of like an asymmetric multiprocessing paradigm where they're running individual applications and operating systems on individual cores independent of each other, right?
Right.
And that's a complicated thing to set up and manage. Alternatively, we've got the symmetric multiprocessing paradigm, which is what everyone's using on their desktop today, right, which is widely deployed in many systems. And then there's sort of the new wave of acceleration approaches, which is to sort of run, some of these individual cores that we have available to us now and run those outside of the Linux scheduler using CPU affinity to run applications independently. And that way they're, not constantly being scheduled out or scheduled in and stuff like that. So there's just so many permutations, and it really all depends on the individual requirements of the system and what makes sense for that system, right?
Right. Okay. Question about device drivers. How does virtualization impact device drivers? Is it normal for virtualized environments to share a single driver below, and do they need to update their drivers in some way to lock between virtualized environments, or typically how is that kind of thing being implemented?
Right, right. So, you know, the first thing we need when we bring in virtualization is things like paravirtualized drivers. So we can run these interfaces often in a sort of like a pass-through mode, or they can be shared among multiple guest operating systems. And for that paradigm, we would use something called SRIOV, which is, you know, a capability for us to share it between operating systems and, you know, essentially share that interface. So, there's a lot of pros and cons to all that, and so it's again, it kind of all depends on the needs of the system, though.
I see. Okay. Here's a question about virtualization to provide isolation between secure validated code and new or third-party code. I've heard about these kinds of things in like DoD or secure. Orange Book security rating kind of applications where you might have to go to a lot of time and expense to validate a specific set of code or functionality where the other part, you know, might not have to be so strict. Is virtualization a good use for that kind of thing?
Absolutely, and for that we have sort of a different offering, if you will. So the key thing there is when you go for certification with virtualization is you want to have a small, you know, a small hypervisor, if you will, to set all that up for you. And it's got to be a minimal lines of code because you're paying, you know, an enormous amount of money to get
right.
that certified per line of code. So a lot of times we'll use a small hypervisor and load in different guest operating systems, and they'll be, you know, bound, and there'll be, you know, there'll be no permission to, you know, go across boundaries. So each one of them will be completely isolated as designed.
Okay, so you can provably test that specific environment on the hypervisor and prove that the other components in the system won't affect that. So.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. All right. We're running low on time. I think we have time for one more question. If they implement virtualization, is there, you can't get into specific numbers without talking CPU processors and things, but can you talk a little bit about what kind of latency virtualization might add to a system?
Right. It's definitely going to add, you know, a measurable latency. And but again, that's our goal, is to analyze that piece by piece and see and find ways to eliminate that. Right. So we, you know, our goal is to, you know, keep that to a bare minimum. So we're looking at, you know, driver optimizations and you know, picking the best design to figure out what the most minimal latency is. And so we've got a lot of tricks up our sleeves to do that.
Okay. Very good. I guess that unfortunately puts us at our limit for the Q&A session. I also want to mention that there is a Wind River newsletter that you should be able to I'm not sure if it's in the presentation right now. You're staring at it. So if you can look at that or click on that link, we encourage you to do so, and you can get you know, timely information to lots of information relative to next generation products and multi-core and virtualization from Wind River. So we encourage you to do that now. Brings us to the end of our e-cast. I'd like to thank so much Paul and Steve for sharing their insights and battling airport terminals today and talking with us about considerations for the development of next-generation network systems. All of us here also want to thank you, the audience, for attending today's presentation and contributing your questions remotely. This e-cast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen. There's also a white paper URL that you can use there to get technical information. Note that there will also be an audio-only podcast that will be available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media e-casts available for download as MP3s. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.